From Creative Force, I'm Daniel Jester, and this is the e-commerce content creation podcast. My guest for this episode is Philip Kirst, founder of Spice Media, a commercial studio providing creative production services for e-commerce brands. In researching Philip, I noticed the word efficiency was used a lot, and while we've discussed all sorts of topics on the show that can be used as synonyms for efficiency, I really wanted to get Philip's perspective on the idea. Our conversation ultimately led to some familiar topics, but with the benefits of Philip's experience providing imagery to his customers.
I think the best thing to really come up with this is like measure it, and you have to make sure that your goal is right, right? I mean, as I said, you even have to reach a certain goal with minimum effort, or it's the other way around. And again, for our clients, we really try to squeeze out water off stones though, right? So it's really like always like a process of getting there, but without any numbers, without measuring it, we would have been lost.
There's plenty more where this came from, so let's take a listen to Philip Kirst talk about efficiency. This is the e-commerce content creation podcast. I am your host, Daniel Jester, and joining me for this episode of the show, Philip Kirst, owner and founder of Spice Media. Philip, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm glad to be here.
I am very happy to have you. We invited you specifically to talk about efficiency, which is an extremely broad topic, it turns out. How this came up, Philip, and for our listeners, is you and I met, I think it was last week, and one of the things we were just chatting about studio production and some of the things that you guys do there at Spice Media, and the term efficiency was coming up a lot, and I just kind of wanted to like have a conversation with you about it, take a step back and say, you know, efficiency is almost a cliche. We talk about it all the time. Business is all about getting more and more efficient, but it does actually mean real things.
True.
So I'm just going to ask you right out of the gate, when we talk about efficiency for a production studio, what does that mean for you specifically in the context of content creation? What kind of things are you looking for?
You know, I think it's like we evolved into this entire topic of efficiency though, right? So it's not like this that you have a studio and you run like perfectly from day one. So at the beginning, I think it's rather like, let's say, heuristics, like rules that you apply that you have gathered by experience or whatever. So eventually, for example, we figured out how to shoot busts just with one employee, not with two that we needed beforehand, because we had like this in clip that somebody must hold like the fabric or whatever to make it nice and clean. So we figured that out without any efficiency loss, right? So these are like, let's say, little heuristics that we have learned over the course of the time. And at the end of the day, so when you have covered all this, you really need to drill pretty deep and go to the details. And that is where the work starts, I would say.
There is certainly low-hanging fruit when it comes to looking for efficient ways of working. Anybody can walk into a studio and see the big problems. But one of the things we tend to overlook sometimes are the small efficiencies that in the aggregate lead up to big savings when you're talking about, you know, productions over the course of months or years.
I think so too. So especially when you multiply it like with the number of pictures that you produce, then if you just like save seconds on like several hundred thousand pictures or whatever, so it really adds up at the end of the year. Of course, I was like thinking before this podcast a little bit about like efficiency, what it really means. And I remembered my, let's say, economic studies that I did like when I was way younger than I am right now. And I think it's like one of the first lessons that you learn on university that they're like something called like an economic principle. And they're like two things. There's like a maximum principle and there's a minimum principle. So the maximum principle actually means, right, that you have a certain resources set, and out of these resources you try to squeeze out like the maximum of output that you can generate. Right, and the minimum principle is like the other way around. So you have a goal set and you try to achieve this goal with like the lowest amount of resources that is possible. And actually, I think when I thought about this in the studio, especially for us being a service provider, like not an in-house studio or something, we have to apply both, because sometimes our clients come to us and say, listen, this is the budget. What can we get for this? Or on the other hand, like sometimes it's like this, that we, of course, are in a tender situation or something. They tell us what they want in terms of pictures, in terms of content. And we have to think like, what is the most efficient way to get there? that was, for me, it was like interesting to think about this, that both kind of principles really apply here in the studio context.
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point that is important to highlight, that as a service provider, a commercial studio, you're a business that is expected to also turn a profit. And then it becomes even more so, whereas an in-house studio oftentimes is viewed as being a cost center, and they definitely want to reduce the costs as much as they can. But the incentives are different for finding those tools for efficiency when you are a commercial studio that is like, you're in business to provide a service and also make money.
That's it. And you know, you have to add a margin onto that. And that is, of course, like something that people want to, or like if they want to pay for this, that's another story. But most of the time they have to pay for it, right?
Right.
That's exactly what you say, Daniel. But I think we have applied a lot of techniques or something to ask ourselves if we are on the right way or not.
That's a great segue that I wanted to kind of ask you. We mentioned earlier, you know, it sometimes is relatively easy to walk into a process and see the big issues that are driving some inefficiencies. What do you think are some techniques that you can use to start to figure out some of the smaller improvements that you need to make? Like, the big ones are dealt with. How do you teach yourself to dig deeper? Or more importantly, I think teach your team to realize, like, hey, I'm doing this in a way that maybe isn't the best way. How can we evaluate some of those small improvements so that we can try to drive some efficiency gains?
I think now we talk, right? I mean, this is where we have to go. And I think, as you can imagine, there's not only like one thing that you need to do. You need to do like tons of things in order to squeeze out or like get efficient. And I think like the one thing, it starts as cheesy as it might sound, but it is really like that. You have to select the right team for this, like people that have the mindset of like, do not want to blow your money, or just have the curiosity in themselves to improve things or whatever. So that is like, for us, as being not such a super old company, we were founded in 2013. That was like the way we started. However, then I think it comes to another super kind of pocket wisdom, that is like, you can't manage what you do not measure. And there we are at the topic of KPIs. And then the question is like, how you measure and what you measure. And that is something I can tell you, that we started with like simple things like counting, like how many pieces we have done, how many pictures we have taken, how long it took, how many people were involved. Then we came to cost per shot. That is all like nice. But at the end of the day, you figure out that even when it comes to KPIs, there's not this one KPIs, even not the cost per shot. I'm rather criticizing this kind of KPI because it can be heavily misleading to what it is. So even that means we have a reporting, and all department heads have their own like department reporting that drills deeper. But in our management meeting, for example, that we have like once a week, so we have like an aggregated reporting that we look at. And only if we look at like several things, we get a clear picture. That's one maybe good example. For example, let's say the productivity in terms of how many pictures can be done at a specific station. And then it really depends, like we call this motif matrix. And the motif matrix for us is like one article gets a certain set of pictures, and the set of pictures we refer to as a motif matrix. So, for example, we did have productions that have like not a good kind of average here. And that were like the pictures, mainly like bus productions, where we only need to do like a front bus picture. We can do like several articles. When we count the articles that we can shoot in a day, this KPI was pretty good. But the amount of pictures that we can take was not as good as we take, let's say, 50 articles, but with like 5 or 6 pictures each.
Right.
So because you have this setup cost, you have to change and whatever. That's the reason why you cannot rely on like a single source. You have to really shoot in many directions in order to get a picture like how you're flying.
You really touched on something that has been on my mind a lot recently around the idea of efficiency loss to context switching. And that is a very easy thing to illustrate on a photography set. There's virtues to both things, right? There's virtues to shooting all of one, like all back shots or front shots first, and then going back and doing through all of the back shots. But then you're sort of batching, and you can run into some bottleneck issues with that. But you know that when you have a photographer, it's going to take them, I'm going to use drill bits as an example. And I have to give you some background on this because there's a specific reason that this example works for this analogy. At Amazon, the style guide for us to shoot drill bits was, I would call it abusive. I think all of the photographers felt like it was abusive. Okay. It was like a 45 degree angle with the camera at like a 45 coming down. And then the drill bits were so small that you had to get the camera really close. So now you're having to focus stack. And then there was an overhead shot straight down of the drill bit that you needed to do. And then you had to actually, like, I think there was a third shot that also involved a camera movement. And we generally encourage the photographers to work in a one-piece workflow, meaning that they shot everything they needed to shoot for one product and then moved on so that that product could move on down the line. But now every shot, the photographer is moving the camera, and it's like you're losing so much time by moving the camera every time. So then it's like, well, what makes sense to here is set up the camera for the angle shot, shoot all the angle shots, and now you've done it significantly faster. But the trade-off is that none of those products can move on in the process until they're all done. And it's a little bit of a conundrum. And then you start to get into all of these ideas of like, okay, well, what if we had a different set for every angle and it was a different photographer? And now you get to the point where the conclusion that you come to here is we have to measure this. We have to measure this. We have to test this. We have to time ourselves, and we have to learn about what is fastest, and also balance that with what can result in what is fastest that results in the fewest errors and maintains a level of quality that we're happy with.
And of course, you have to not forget like the people as well, right? I mean, then at the end, you can maybe come up as working on a conveyor belt or whatever, yeah, where you do like photo shootings. But if you still have to work with creative people, or let's say like people that are half creative or whatever, yeah, so that is something that they cannot do, that the intention span, so to say, will be not as good and not as long or whatever.
I feel like we've just kind of very clearly illustrated a problem and offered no solutions because it's too hard.
No, but that's not true, but
it's balancing all of these things, right? It's like everything. It's just like the triangle of quality, speed, and price. It's always a balancing act when it comes to your team internally. It's a balancing act of efficiency, productivity, and employee satisfaction and happiness.
Absolutely. I mean, it's exactly like this. So, you know, there is like this one efficiency thing. And I think the best thing to really come up with this is like measure it. And you have to make sure that your goal is right, right? I mean, as I said, you even have to reach a certain goal with minimum effort, or it's the other way around.
Right.
And again, for our clients, we really try to squeeze out water off stones though, right? So it's really like always like a process of getting that. But without any numbers, without measuring it, we would have been lost. And I can tell you, and I think that that's like something that everyone goes through too, that it sets up like a KPI system. The way how you measure is like highly affecting like the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
For example, like time per shot or time per motif or whatever. Do you count in like the setup cost? Like when a stylist puts on like something on a model or whatever, do you not count it in? Is it separately? And so on and so forth. And Then you can see like super nice differences between, for us, for example, we of course have different clients, and even though sometimes clients have exactly kind of the same motif matrix and kind of similar kind of clothes, let's say like an outdoor client or something, but some of them have very good quality clothes and other one not. So with some clients, you just like have to take ages for creating a nice style for the stylist. And with others, just like it's easy. And so this kind of things or efficiency losses, you see that. And then you can talk, then you can approach the client with this.
I want to pivot a little bit and talk about, you know, as we're talking about our teams, and it's important to make sure that they're feeling like they're contributing and that they aren't feeling like they're part of a robotic process.
Yeah.
For any studio, in-house or commercial service provider, I think that it's really important to invest some time and money into your team to grow themselves. And growing themselves, we've talked about it on this podcast a lot about, you know, more creative projects, using the resources of the studio to shoot things that maybe aren't for a customer, but to help them kind of grow their skill. Another important thing that can actually have a real tangible benefit for a studio is giving your teams time and space to test their own process ideas. And the example that I'll give you really quick is, again, at Amazon, we had a very well-documented process for improvements to set. As we've been talking about this, I was thinking about, you know, those little styling tricks that you come up with to try to do things faster. And it's been documented on this podcast that in my days as a photographer, my least favorite thing to shoot was backpacks. They're so hard to style. They can be so dramatically different. Every style guide for backpacks usually involves stringing up the straps so that they appear as they should.
Nicer.
And so I sat down one day with one of the stylists at Amazon and I said, you know what? We're going to take today and we're going to time ourselves shooting backpacks. And then we're going to figure out a way to solve for having to like shoot the main shot with the straps tied up, then pull it down, turn it around, tie them up again. We're going to figure out a way to solve that. So we timed ourselves all day. We shot X number of backpacks in a day. It took X number of minutes per backpack. And then we designed this thing that you could connect your lines to string up the straps to, but that thing could rotate freely along with the backpack. So you'd shoot the front shot, string up your straps, and then rotate the whole assembly around so you didn't have to unstring anything.
Yeah.
It cut our time in half for each backpack easily from not having to untie everything and then retie it up. I was blown away by this result. But the problem is, from a purely productivity standpoint, if you want to talk about, you know, we have an analogy or a sort of a character for this, Chief Moneybags of your studio only cares about the money.
Yeah.
And the concern is that that was 2 days it took us to test this and learn this efficiency. We have to be willing to invest, I think, in our teams some time to explore these ideas. They're not going to be productive, maybe. They're maybe not going to be working on customer facing things, but they're going to learn things that will impact and will get more efficient.
I could not agree more to this. So we are doing this quite heavily, and especially since we have like so many new requirements because we get like new clients, right? So every client comes up with, of course, their little own idea about how to shoot, let's say, backpacks or t-shirts or whatever. And we need to figure this out. And so that's the reason why always at the beginning of like something, we do not have any kind of quantitativity expectations to the team. And we communicate this very clearly to the client that we will not be able or not go like for an SLA like straight away or whatever. Yeah? Or they have to pay it. That's a different story. But anyway, so like creativity workshops where they can like let their mind flown, that is always a very good tool to improve. We have something that we actually like set in place like last year. We called it Spice Lab. Mm. So we're always like a specific time in a month, we do exactly what you just described, but just like play around with things, being creative. So it goes on both sides, right? It's not only like drill more out of a certain process, but it's about being more creative and, hey, how can we shoot this and this better? How could a light look like even cooler and stuff like that?
I'm not distracted, but I'm booking my plane ticket to Budapest right now so that I can come work in the Spice Lab, because this is literally a dream of mine, Philip. Like the idea of having a studio that's like a test kitchen where my whole job is just to say, like, one of my favorite things to watch are like the videos from Bon Appetit where they just cook 4 different turkeys and figure out which one is the best. My dream is to work in a studio like this where it's like any off the wall idea that you might have, like, let's test it out, see what we could do. I love that idea. And
Daniel, you will be heavily invited and you're more than welcome to come up. And I can tell you like the people love to share their knowledge and they're like super curious. And that's, again, then it comes back to like getting the right people that have this curiosity in them.
I love the idea of sort of like the ramp up period for a new client for a commercial studio. I think that's super important. And especially, you know, you get clients who come to you when you're a service provider and they just know a lot of times, especially if it's a newer brand or somebody who's coming to market, they know that they need images, but they don't understand that it's really a relationship that they're developing. It's not really transactional. We need to learn about you. We need to learn about your brand and we need to spend some time with your product. I guess the question that I want to ask is like the efficiency isn't a switch that you can flip on and off. You have to relearn it for every client. So How important is that sort of like onboarding period for you for a new client?
It is the absolute most important period that we have anyways with each client. And it's true for like an entirely new client, but it's true as well when a client would like to change certain things, but we have like workshops and stuff like that. So for this one, for example, we have invented or put in place like something that we called the CISR process. It sounds a little bit like sketchy, but it's about like the client initiation status reporting. We figured out that so much information is needed at different parts of time, at different departments, and all must come together. So it's too much. Like the production department needs to know specific things. Data management must be assured. Like we need to know about the styling. Are there certain rules? Can we mix certain things? Are there like color windows or color frames that we have to consider and so on and so forth. So it's so much. And unless you would like to meet to death with tons of people, that is highly inefficient again, we came up with a process where we kind of have a pretty big comprehensive Excel list where it shows like what kind of information is needed when and it must be delivered by whom in the process. And like this, you are highly depending on your clients that they are understanding that this is necessary and don't think, damn, I just want to have pictures. Why don't you just deliver them? Right? So, which happens, unfortunately, sometimes.
We've talked about it quite a bit on this show. Post-production is an important part of content creation, and a lot of those post-production questions need to be asked up front before they get to the retoucher. That's just one small part of what you're describing, which is like, you know, tell us a little bit about the aspect ratio or the pixel dimensions of what you need. And especially when you're dealing with, like, again, a brand that is maybe coming to market, they don't always know what they don't know about what they need in terms of imagery.
The best relationship we figured out is really always with like really professional departments, or where you have on the other end, like really professionals talking to you that understand that the picture, like this process is nothing. I can tell you that before I founded the company, I was sitting on the other side of the table. So I was at an online fashion retailer and I was responsible for operations that contained the picture production process. And I was always wondering, why the heck is this so expensive? I mean, it's just pictures. I do pictures with my iPhone all the time. It costs me nothing. Why do you want me to pay like so much money for pictures? To be honest, only after I founded my own company with that, I understood like why. And I was feeling ashamed.
I mean, that's literally why we have this podcast, is because the process is infinitely more complicated with so many more variables than anybody really assumes. And none of us, I don't think, really like set out to get into necessarily a career in creative production for e-commerce at scale, but we've fallen into it and it's an adventure for sure. It's so complicated. I don't mean that in a negative way, but there's so many variables and there's so many problems to solve. And I find it all really interesting and fascinating. Last question I want to ask you, Philip, as a closer for the episode. In your experience and in your mind, do efficiency and creativity work together, or are they opposed to each other or somewhere in between? A loaded question.
Oh, yeah. How much time do we have? I think, you know, there are like maybe two answers to this. I think on the one hand, they are opposing. If you would like to stretch them to infinity and you would like to be infinite, like creative or whatever. So that means you're going to try out certain things. You're going to play around. You want to check out what's possible, so to say. And that, of course, costs time, and time is like one kind of pretty important part of efficiency. So that means I think they are opposing. However, I think it does not mean that you cannot find the right balance between them. And I think then we are back to goal setting. So it really, it's about what is the goal? For example, I mean, we have clients, and I think that's true for any in-house studio or something as well. You have clients or products that require high attention, high precision, so to say. And that is like a matter of how to get there. You have to be creative. And the picture has to look like in a very specific creative way as well. So for this, you need to apply more creativity. You have to reduce the expectation of throughput. On the other hand, there are clients where it's just a decent standard, which is totally fine because it's just like a decent product and it must sell. And like this, you don't have to take like 20 front views of a model shot, of 20 outfit views. You can reduce that. So I think it's really like a matter of the goal. That is the one thing. I think when we talk about efficiency and creativity as an output kind of measurement, then they are kind of opposing. However, what we have to consider again are the people. So as you just phrased it like very well, people there don't want to feel that they work in any kind of robotic environment where they're like on a conveyor belt and just have to push buttons or whatever. So they want to live a certain kind of creativity. So even though you maybe have like a very streamlined process, you have to provide certain kind of place and space for creativity so that people feel that they are like more than only button pushers, so to say.
Couldn't agree more, Philip. Thank you so much for coming on the show and having this conversation with me. At the time that this episode will be released, we're getting pretty close to Christmas time, and I imagine that the holidays in Budapest are probably quite beautiful. So happy holidays to you and your team, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Daniel, and thanks for the invitation. I can just give the same to you. Have a very merry Christmas time, and yeah, maybe tonight I will even hit like one of the Christmas markets here, so that's on my list for tonight maybe.
Excellent. Looking forward to having you back too. I think we talked about that, but your insight and your experience is valuable to us. So we'll have you back on the show again for sure.
Thanks again.
That's it for this episode of the show. Many thanks to our guest, Philip Kirst, and thanks to you for listening. The show is produced by Creative Force, edited by Calvin Lands. Special thanks to Sean O'Meara. I'm your host, Daniel Jester. Until next time, my friends.